morning. Go ahead and be seated. All right. Next matter on calendar this morning, docket number 53969, Orion Portfolio Services versus County of Clark University Medical Center. Are we ready to go?
We are, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Kennedy, did you want to save any time?
Yes, Your Honor. I've advised the clerk I'd like to save 5 minutes.
All right.
May it please the court, Dennis Kennedy on behalf of the appellant, Orion Portfolio Services 2, LLC. This matter comes to the court on two certified questions. The first is whether a local government must follow public bidding rules outlined in chapters 332 and 333A of the Nevada Revised Statutes when selling property to public auction. The answer to that question is clearly it does not have to follow those public bidding rules. If it is selling property that is no longer required by the governmental entity. And the answer to that question being no comes directly from the statute, which is, of course, the first place that the court would look. The statute itself, 332.185, contains two sentences, and it contains two distinct parts. The first sentence says, if the governmental entity is selling personal property, the local government entity, those sales must be made as nearly as possible under the same conditions and limitations as required by this chapter in the purchase of personal property. And that typically involves a request for proposals, bidding criteria, and stuff that are all set out in the statute itself. But 332.185 has a second sentence, and the second sentence says that if the prop, and I'm paraphrasing it, if the property is no longer required for public use, then the governmental entity can dispose of the property in any manner, including without limitation, at public auction if the governmental entity determines that it's in the public interest to do so. So what you have in the statute, the first sentence is a general statement that says if you're going to sell public property, it has to be done essentially in conformity with the rules on competitive bidding where the government purchases the property. And then the second sentence says, but if this is property that is no longer required for public use, in essence, you can sell it in any way you want to sell it. So what we have is we have the first sentence saying you got to follow these competitive bidding rules, and the second sentence saying if it's no longer required for public use, dispose of it in any manner that you see fit.
Mr. Kennedy, if that is true, though, why should we disregard if the entity determines they wish to go to auction?
Well,
the requirements that they then follow the public bid requirements if they're going to sell by public auction. If they decide not to, then they're free, as you said, to dispose in any manner. But if they decide to do the public bid manner, their requirements. Why?
Good question, and this court answered that in 1963 in the Harmon v. Tanner case.
But there's a specific statute in the 600s as to airports.
That's right, and this court addressed that. And the court said, look, just because you tried to follow the public bidding rules, if those rules are not applicable in the first instance, then a deviation from those rules does not allow someone to allege that the sale was done improperly. In other words, you can do it that way, but if those rules don't apply, then a deviation from those rules does not invalidate the sale. That's the Harmon case, and we cited the other case.
But you would agree that the hospital here did advertise these contracts and followed ostensibly at the beginning the public sale requirements of 332, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. They were trying to do that. As we pointed out, there were some words that don't exactly fit, but they were trying to do that.
But they were trying to follow 332 and do a public sale.
They were trying to do that.
What do you do then with NRS 332.065 paragraph 1, which postdates Harmon, but says if a governing body has advertised or requested bids in letting a contract, and admittedly, again, you've got the verbal disconnect, the governing body must award the contract to the lowest responsive and responsible bidder. That implies to me that, and this statute was passed in 1975, that in this having set about the sale in a public manner, they have to complete it in a public manner, which is to say they can't go behind after the bid has been submitted and revise with the bidder they want to accept the terms of what was bid.
Well, I understand what the statute says, but I think one has to read into that statute that there is a requirement that the bid be the bidding procedures be followed. Because the other statute, and then you have a conflict between the statutes, because 185 says if it's not required for public use, do whatever you want. Okay, you can dispose of it in any manner that you want. And so you can say, well, we're going to dispose of it in accordance with the public bidding statute. Okay, and then when there is a deviation from that, I mean, it's just as easy to argue, well, the statute really says if it's this specific type of property that is no longer of public use, we don't have to comply with the statute.
Well, what property would a public entity be selling that is of public use?
Good example would be used automobiles. Automobiles that still work and could still be used, say, for the city or the county, but they've decided that they're going to sell that fleet and buy a new fleet just for economic reasons.
So, and you would say that the only thing that the first sentence in 085 applies to is property in that category?
It would be, but that's the majority of the property that's owned by the county, because the county could decide to sell something that still is of public use, but they're going to decide to sell it. And the second part of the statute talks about things that are no longer of use to the public, and you can dispose of them in any way you want. Now, to see how the statute developed that way, if you look at the legislative history of the statute, it's pretty clear what happened. The statute previously, in its initial incarnation, just had the first sentence. It just said, if you're selling, you've got to do it in accordance with the public bidding. And then, in 1999, the statute was amended, and of course this was all in our brief starting at page 14, to add, you can sell it not just in accordance with competitive bidding, but at auction. And then the statute was amended in 1999 to say, well, wait a minute, the only way you can sell property that's no longer for public use is, the only way you can sell outside of the competitive bidding statute is if the property is no longer for public use. And then in 2001, they said, and you can do it in any manner. So I understand the language in 065 that says if you're going to do it, you have to...
If you do it.
But then you have another statute that's amended after that that says, well, you can really do it in any manner. So there's a conflict in those statutes, because the one says you have to do it in a certain way, and the other one says you can do it in any manner you want. So you can do it in accordance with 065 until something occurs, and then you can fall back on the other statute and say, well, but it really lets me do it in any manner I want, so I'll do it in partial compliance with 065, and then I'll make some other changes to it. So you've got a conflict between the two statutes. I readily admit to that.
Why can't you harmonize them by saying you're not obligated to, but if you embark on a public sale and a public bid, you must, as 065 says, follow it through to the end. Why doesn't that harmonize those two? And that's our job, is to make them both make sense.
I understand, but the other statute does say dispose of it in any manner you want.
I agree with you.
Mr. Kennedy, and I say this with great trepidation, seeing being an English major was not something that I confuse myself with having been. But as I look at the context of 332.185, as you're talking about, it says dispose of personal property of the local government by any manner, comma, including, comma, without limitation, comma, at public auction, comma, if the governing body. Wouldn't it have just been a simple way to do it would have been local government, they can dispose of it in any manner if the governing body decides to do it, and left out those little subsections?
You could have. But if you go back and trace the history of the statute, it went from originally being you must follow the public bidding procedures, and then it said, or public auction, which, of course, are two completely different things. Public auction, highest bidder, here's the money, take it away.
And that's my problem. They left in this language. They said any manner, then they put a comma, then they go on.
And I think what happened is that the words public auction were already in the statute. And so they just added or in any other manner and left the public auction language in there. I will, if there are no further questions on this, I have reserved the balance of my time. And so I would.
Right. Any other questions, colleagues? Okay, we actually chewed into your time, so I'm going to give you your full request.
May it please the court, Your Honors, I'm Tom Dillard. I'm here with Joseph Fortuna as well. On behalf of the respondents, University Medical Center, Clark County, Xrel University Medical Center, as Nevada statute indicates, UMC is a subdivision of Clark County. And we're here today on a certification from the United States District Court of Nevada, Chief Judge Hunt, on two issues. Motions for summary judgment were filed very early, really at the outset of the pleading stage in that case, because these are conclusions of law, essentially, and Judge Hunt asked for certification on those issues. One thing I wanted to point out at the outset, and I apologize for this, we didn't do as good a job as we could have in the briefs to make this clear. I think the formation of the issues are a little by Judge Hunt, not the best wording. And the reason I say that is he includes in there the operative word public auction. The contract that we're talking about, and there's no evidence to the contrary, was not put up for public auction in the sense of auction the way the county would operate at the courthouse steps giving notice and bidders. It was done by a public bidding process. The entirety of Judge Hunt's issue recognized that fact. It was done by a public bidding request for bid, and the briefs are undisputed on that issue. But I wanted to point that out.
Mr. Dillard, are you opting for us not to answer the question as it's been now submitted to us by the federal court? To just return this matter?
No, Your Honor. The only thing I'm pointing out is I think Judge Hunt used the term public auction in a generic sense to include all aspects, including public bidding, competitive bidding that was done here. If you read the statute under a microscope, which we're doing here.
Wasn't this an invitation to bid, though?
It was.
To the general public?
It was an invitation to bid, request for bids. And I think that's it may be just a semantical difference.
Well, is it? Isn't there a difference between public auction and competitive bidding?
The statute suggests that, Your Honor. The statute.
Indeed, it does.
Yeah, and that's our position.
Judge Hunt's wording was as precise as he intended it to be, because the statute uses the words public auction. So my question is, does public auction have, are they words of art? And if so, how are they defined?
Well, a public auction is defined in the statute. The first sentence in the statute says that all sales of personal property must be done as nearly as possible under the same conditions and limitation as required by this chapter. And this chapter is Section 332, and the whole structure of it is one of competitive bidding and purchase for local government purchasing of property, as well as sale of property.
But it's all in the context of competitive bidding for purchases.
Correct.
That's different than a public auction. Or is it? Because the second sentence refers only to public auction. It doesn't say anything about competitive bidding.
It does not. Well, it refers to in any manner across the board. And the operative word in that, that to get to that second sentence, is that... the property is no longer required for public use. In fact,
it seems like your argument in your briefs attempts to equate the process described in the first sentence with public auction referred to in the second sentence. And in a sense, you're saying competitive bidding is the same as public auction. I'm not sure that's true.
No, Your Honor. What I'm saying is the first sentence is competitive bidding. And the statute sets forth the procedure for that. If it's in excess of $50,000, it must be advertised. And then bidders, invitations to bid are put up. Bidders have a certain date to get in their bids, which are blind, must comport with the bidding requirements. And at a particular date, then, the bids are opened and a determination is made as to lowest bid. In this case, a recommendation, and a recommendation only, came from the CEO, Lacey Thomas, to give it to what he deemed was the lowest responsive and responsible bidder, the operative words that Justice Pickering pointed out and later in the statute. Then the policymaking officials of Clark County, the board, made a determination as to lowest responsive and responsible bidder. That's the competitive bidding or public bid process. A public auction such as posting and for everyone to show up at the courthouse steps at a particular time and have an auctioneer is a different process.
But you would concede that it was not obligatory on the hospital to put this out for public bidding, or would you?
The statute, I think, is a mandatory. It's a statutory mandate to do public bidding unless three determinations are made. An official action is reached by the local government. That is, that the property is not required for public use, that it's desirable that they pick some other format outside of public bidding, including public auction, but it could be some other means of disposing of the property. And the third basis, Your Honor, is that it is in the best interest of the county to do it that way.
But suppose that argument fails and it's discretionary with the, if you read that statute, and it's a credible reading that it's entirely discretionary which form of disposition to take, public bidding, public auction, donation to charity. Accept that premise. What do you do with Mr. Kennedy's argument about the Harmon case and the fact that having embarked on a competitive bidding process that was not obligatory on the hospital, they were free to revise that freehand as they went forward?
Your Honor, setting aside the factual predicate for that, the Harmon case is distinguishable from this case and from the very statute at issue here. Taking a step back, Chapter 332, its entirety, for the most part, is the strictures of competitive bidding. And within that section, within that entire title, you have this particular section that says that it makes the rule being property must be sold during with the strictures of competitive bidding. Now, is it true that that the determining factors are discretionary, yes, but official action is required to by the policymaker to trigger that exception and get it outside the competitive bidding realm. And so I would have to argue that, yes, that the county had the discretion in this case, had they deemed to exercise it, to not do competitive bidding. However, those determinations were never met. The record is devoid of any indication that they did that. Indeed, they followed competitive bidding to the letter. And having chosen to undertake competitive bidding are bound by the entirety of the chapter, as the statute suggests. Harmon, however, you have an airport case. Airport limousine contracts are at issue. You have an entire section, 442, I believe, that deals with airports and letting of contracts to vendors at airports. And it basically gave the aviation department discretion across the board to enter into those contracts. And the Harmon court was very careful to say the competitive bidding statute at issue then does not apply. It's inapplicable to this situation. In fact, we cannot harmonize public bidding and the discretion afforded to the airport authority under the statute. And so finding that they were entirely governed by the airport statute and it was entirely discretionary, public bidding was not, or the public bidding strictures weren't pertinent at all. That's not this case. The language in the statute says must. And that's a statutory mandate absent those determinations being made.
Mr. Diller, would you care to answer the second question put forth?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. The second issue posed is whether a contract is that it substantially differs from the invitation to bid, whether it's enforceable. And Judge Hunt posed that question, I suppose, in a factual vacuum, and I'm trying not to argue the facts here. As we set forth in our brief, we quoted several learned treatises citing a host of cases, admittedly from other jurisdictions, in fact saying that there are a legion of authority that makes clear that a statute that substantially differs from what's put up for competitive bidding is void. Judge Hunt made that clear in his order. He said the Clark County has cited a number of cases, but there is not a Nevada case on this that settled this issue. But you look at those cases, and they all make that determination based on the public policy, the very important public policies underlying competitive bidding. That is to protect the public, to protect the bidders, and in some times to protect the government from itself. And when you're looking at bids, we are judging apples versus apples, not changing the playing field after the invitation to bids and meeting out a contract that differs substantially from what was bid on earlier.
Do any of your cases address the situation here where you have a statute that does not mandate competitive bidding but rather makes it optional and where they embark on competitive bidding and then switch it? The cases you're citing are the general ones where you have a statutory mandate, not a statutory preference for competitive bidding. And that suggests to me there may be a policy difference there.
Your Honor, in all candor, I don't know. And I apologize for that. The cases do what was argued by the appellant in the briefs, that they don't. These cases don't involve a situation where after a bid is awarded, that the contract negotiated later changes, and that's not true. Many of the cases are in those factual contexts precisely, that the negotiations afterwards altered the contract and rendered it void.
Right, but they all had a statutory mandate requiring competitive bidding, correct?
I don't know whether that's true one way or the other, whether the statutes mandated that competitive bidding or whether the municipal entity had the discretion to undergo competitive bidding or not. I can review the case and brief and supplement on that if that's the court's desire, but I don't know the answer to that question.
There's a case, Faust versus Donray, doesn't talk about voidness, but it talks about rejecting bids if they're materially varying from the specs. The comment as to that and the question presented.
Well, I think the Faust case supports the positions we put forth here. And one of the ways it supports it is that it has some very explicit language as to the public policies involving competitive bidding. That's in footnote one of that case. That case involved an unsuccessful bidder bringing a mandamus petition and claiming that they were the basically lowest responsible bidder. And the court found that that petition was not did not have merit because their bid was materially different than what was put up for bid. So it was a challenge by an unsuccessful bidder. But the operative language the court uses is equal application here. That is the letting of a contract and competitive bidding as a whole. If that equal playing field is not abided by whether it be the bidder or what happens after the contract, then it's violative of the statute and not enforceable. There are several other cases, the Gulf Oil and Richards Construction case that also had similar language about the importance of competitive bidding. I'm unaware, Your Honor, of a minority rule on this issue. We've cited the treatises and a litany of cases. Plaintiffs have criticized us for not coming forward the Nevada case, which we cannot, but they have not supplied the court any other case suggesting there's a minority view on this issue. And they serve the competitive bidding public policy. These cases serve the very public policies at issue at 332, and it stands to reason the Nevada Supreme Court on several of the occasions have underscored the importance of that public policy. If this rule, that is to find unenforceable contracts that are negotiated with a substantial deviation from what was bid, if they're enforceable effectually, eviscerates the purpose of public policy and makes the statute a nullity. It, for the very things it's supposed to protect, unfair favoritism, nepotism, potential corruption, if a government employee can negotiate a contract with someone else afterwards and change materially what that contract is about, those very public policy issues are undermined.
Orion cites some federal authority, Bud Mahas Construction, Inc., that says it doesn't have to be identical. How do you respond?
Well, the language and the question Judge Hunt posed was material difference. And maybe that's a factual question, but that's not, may I continue, Your Honor? Thank you. That's not really part of the certification that Judge Hunt asked for. In this case, the plaintiff has indicated that the contracts or the aged accounts that they think are impermissible under what was negotiated involve about $70 million worth of bills. So on the issue of materiality, we'd be glad to litigate that issue. Thank you for your time, Your Honor.
Any other questions?
I have just one, Mr. Dillard, if I might. The jurisprudence that you rely on regarding the materiality rule seems to flow from, again, competitive bidding processes. Are those policy objectives the same in a public auction, where there is a difference, assuming there is a difference? But it seems like a public auction is different than competitive bidding, at least under the rules structured in the first paragraph, or excuse me, the first sentence.
I would agree with how Your Honor phrased the end of that, that the way the statute reads, it suggests that they're different. I would, however, say if this, hypothetically, if you had somebody that prevailed at a public auction, and then the contract that manifested itself thereafter resulted in a different contract than what was put up for auction, then the very issues here, that is a level playing field for all bidders or all those participating in the auction, there's an end around there, and there's a violation.
Thank you.
I have about three or four points. The first is that the argument that was made by UMC was, I think, in response to Justice Pickering's question, there never was any official action to trigger the predicate for the second sentence in 185. I don't know what action could be more official than what Mr. Thomas did, who was the CEO, in putting the matter on the agenda. This is in Volume 1, Tab 6, page 183 of the Joint Appendix. Mr. Thomas writes that these accounts had been written off as bad debt. And from a business standpoint, once an account has been written off as bad debt, there is little hope of recovery. Now, I mean, you can argue, I don't think credibly, that these were of no further use to Clark County, but I don't think they were. Once you write them off as bad debt and you say there's little chance of recovery, they're really not of any further use. And so I think that, it's fair to say, was the triggering event to bring this transaction within the second sentence of 185. The Faust case, as Justice Douglas points out, and Justice Hardesty, that's the rejection of a bid, and that's different if you're trying to articulate a principle of law than the ability to reject a contract once formed and entered into and essentially performed on one side. Rejecting a bid because it's not in conformity simply requires a review of the what is submitted and a determination made of whether or not it fits within the request for proposal or the request for the bid. But once you've accepted someone's bid, entered into a written contract, and that contract has been performed by one party, in this case, somebody paid about $5.7 million to UMC, to the county. And a year later was told, almost a year later, 10 months later, was told, you know, we don't think this is a valid agreement. I would suggest, and didn't return the $5.7 million either. I would suggest to you that the principle that one would apply in those two situations would have to be different. And the way that the principle becomes different, in our view, is that either ratification or estoppel has to play into this in determining whether or not a contract can be rejected or can be voided a year later after it's been performed by one side. We brief that, and it...
Those are issues for the federal court to play with. They've asked us specifically, though.
Here's why I think they're before this court. Because the second question says, what is the principle of law governing the voiding of an agreement a bid that doesn't meet the bid specifications? I've paraphrased that. And my point is this, that if you're going to articulate that principle and you look at the cases, what the cases say are, and we've cited a couple of them in our brief, they say, you know what you look at? You look to see whether or not the bidder, if that bid was accepted, would gain a competitive advantage in the bid. And the second thing you look at is whether or not there is some corresponding disadvantage to the governmental entity. So it's easy to apply that when you're rejecting a bid, because you'd say, wow, this doesn't conform. This gives somebody a competitive advantage, or it changes the terms significantly so that the government's assurance of performance or of quality performance is somehow placed in doubt. Those two principles, which are the two principles that run through all of these cases in the authority to reject non-conforming bids, may not apply or may not apply with the same force when you look at a contract that's been accepted, signed, and performed by one side. And that's the position that we're urging the court to look at, because when you get to that second question, it's easy to say, sure, non-conforming material variation entitles someone to reject a bid, but that really doesn't apply to the facts of this case. So when the court is answering that question, I'm not saying the court decides the case, but I think you have to answer it within the context of the facts of this case and be aware that a general statement of that principle of law really might not answer the question, in fact, wouldn't answer the question that's been presented here.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the briefing and the good arguments today. This matter will stand.